Welcome to the TBD podcast on ESPN 960. It's the newest podcast on ESPN960sports.com where we will cover anything and everything that has to do with Cougar Hoops. I'm your host, Zach Hicken. Joining me with his hot takes is Robbie McCombs. Robbie, how you doing today, man?
Good to be here, Zach. I'm excited for this. You know, TBD podcast, might keep it. Kind of has a cool name to it, you know, TBD. But I think we'll probably roll with something else. You know, it's the first podcast, a little new. But we'll probably put it on Twitter out there, try to get the best name on there. So think, get those creative juices flowing right now. We want something creative for this podcast. Me and Zach are pretty stoked about this.
Yeah, for sure. It's a project that we have been meaning to get together for the last couple weeks. But Rivalry Week, it's going to get some stuff done. And we're going to preview Utah and Weber State. We're also going to recap BYU's win against Belmont. Talk a little bit about Jimmer's D-League debut. And then we're going to talk about the groundbreaking of the Marriott Center Annex, which I think is huge. It's something that's been a long time coming, and the next 10 months are going to be a great build-up up until the facility is finished. So we did say the name of the podcast. It's TBD. In case you don't know acronyms, it means to be determined.
Still working on that one.
So if you guys have any suggestions, tweet at us. You can follow us on Twitter at Zach Hicken and at RT McCombs. But we're going to get started with the starting lineup. First up, we have the Belmont game. BYU wins. Can you get me the final score, Robbie? I don't have that in front of me.
Yeah, the final score, let me remember, it was 95-81. So BYU almost put up triple digits, but yeah, 95-81 was the score.
And the big story from that was that, first off, it was a lot of outrage from BYU fans that Kyle Collinsworth, he was one rebound away from a triple-double. Chase Fisher goes to the line with about 15 seconds left. Everyone starts chanting for him to miss it, and he got all confused. He thought that they were cheering for him for, like, him to make the bucket so they could get free ice cream or hot dogs or something. He didn't find out until after that Kyle was only one rebound away from a triple-double. So everyone went to bed that night kind of frustrated, kind of what could have been in this, kind of the cherry on top of the sundae for that nice win over Belmont. But we wake up the next day and the NCAA actually reviewed the game. And awarded Kyle another triple-double. Robbie, talk to me a little bit about that. Was that just the NCAA kind of throwing BYU a bone and giving Kyle the record? Or what kind of went on there? Talk about that.
Yeah, first of all, if you didn't know, so it was the all-time. Kyle already had the season record. He had all six of his triple-doubles last year, which beat the season record and tied the career record, which was just Shaq. Shaq had six career triple-doubles in his 2 years at LSU, so I mean, to say is it fair to say Kyle Collinsworth is better than Shaq, then, I guess you could say?
you definitely could say yeah. That. I mean, granted, it did take Kyle 3 years to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess he did it in a season, though.
Seasons, so.
Yeah.
I mean, that's for another discussion, but it was a really weird scene, just being at the Marriott Center at the end. The loudest parts of the game were when Belmont, they were shooting free throws with 10 seconds left. The Rock was just going crazy, trying to get Belmont to miss those free throws so Casey could get those rebounds. The Belmont bench was just confused, like, what the heck are these guys cheering now? They're about to win. It's really strange. It was really cool. The BYU fans are obviously aware of it. Kyle kind of said he wasn't aware of it. And how much I think he was, honestly, but you don't know what the
I think he was aware of it, but you want to put that in the back of your mind. Yeah. You don't want to be thinking about, you know, what could I accomplish here? You want to focus. Now, granted, they were up by double digits.
Yeah.
There was no way that they were going to lose the game.
Yeah, yeah.
I think at that point in the game, you kind of focus on, you know, I need to get up and I need to fight for those boards, come in on the glass, crash hard, and do what I can to get myself in the record books.
Yeah, but it's just kind of funny. It's just kind of anticlimactic because a lot of times it's like, where were you moments. It's like, oh, where were you when Kyle Collinsworth broke his triple-double record? It's like, well, I was on the couch in my sweats with my phone in my hand, saw the tweet. Cool, you got it.
That's about what happened with me. I rolled over on Sunday morning. This is a Cougar Hoops podcast, but we can talk a little football. I was up in Logan at the football game, and man, that was the coldest I've ever been in my entire life.
Yeah,
I was wearing three pairs of socks, two pairs of leggings, jeans, boots, and Oh my goodness. It took me until the next morning until I felt thawed out. So I rolled over. I remember scrolling. It was actually through Instagram. I didn't get the news through
Oh,
Twitter.
okay.
I saw that the BYU Rock Instagram account put that information out, and it was really exciting. I got back from Logan. There was about 2 minutes left in the game, and I sat in my car listening to Greg Wrubell on the radio play-by-play
Yep.
describing what was going on, and my heart was pounding. I was just like, oh my gosh, he's gonna get this. I can't, I don't have the visual, so Greg using,
Greg, his artistic
I'm
way of painting
yeah,
the
he's so
picture.
artistic, and I can imagine everything. I can imagine Chase at the line, and he had struggled that game from the line.
Yeah, he missed a
I
couple
was like,
earlier.
okay, he's definitely gonna miss this. Kyle's
No.
gonna be in the low block. He's gonna go up for that rebound.
Gonna get it.
Belmont's not gonna even contest it because they
No.
probably know what's
5 seconds
going
left.
on.
Yeah, and they make
That's what's going on in my head. And then Chase makes it and buzzer. Like, that's the game.
Yeah.
Really anticlimactic, but it was to wake up that next morning, it was pretty cool to see that.
But yeah, not only did Kyle get the triple double, but going over the to recap the game a little bit, BYU just played. I was very impressed with BYU, especially the second half. Look at the first half; it was a close 42-40. And Belmont, they just might be the best 3-point shooting team BYU plays all year. Craig Bradshaw, Belmont shooting guard, Ohio Valley Conference Player of the Year, super good guard, shoots close to 50% from 3-point range. And BYU just put Kyle Collinsworth on him in the second half, and I think Bradshaw, he only had about 7 points, so really shut him down the second half. So just that, it was also good to see Chase Fisher finally get out of his slumps. He did well in the UU game, but he's just been really struggling the past 3 games. So I think that was great to see out of Chase Fisher the second half. Came out, scored all 19 of his points in the second half, made 5 3-pointers. Now we got to go to Nick Emery. What do you think about Nick Emery this season? I think he's might be BYU's most important player this season, to be honest.
I agree. I came into the season thinking that Kyle Collinsworth was going to be that he was going to kind of up his load. He was going to kind of take over that scoring load for Tyler, but he was still going to have to do the other things that he did,
Yeah.
get out those assists, crash the glass, get boards. I would think with the improvement in the front court, he wouldn't have to fight so hard for rebounds, but
Still doing it, seems like.
Kyle is just—he's so natural. He has great proprioception,
Yeah.
knows where he is in space, and has a knack for finding the ball. But Nick, I kind of expected him to kind of be like a sixth man coming off the bench, adding a spark, and that's—you could see from what the coaching staff did early on that that was kind of their plan for him until he kind of got acclimated into the college game. And he did really quickly. He struggled against Long Beach State, but who didn't?
Yeah, I think
everyone on the team
that was
did.
you just gotta put that
Besides
one in the
Corbin
trash can.
Cafusi. Corbin Cafusi just went off that game.
Yeah, that was
but
we don't talk that game was after midnight, so I think a lot of you
that's
just
what
gotta forget that
that's
game.
when the spirit goes to bed, and
Yeah, exactly.
apparently
Twitter after dark, just talk everything.
the talent of BYU's basketball team.
Yeah.
But Nick has stepped into that role as the primary scorer. He doesn't do it the same way that Hawes did. I don't know that it's going to be hard to replace the way that Hawes did it because
Definitely.
it was quiet and it was reliable.
Hosh just did it so quietly. You look up and you have 22 points. Like, where did that
And
come from?
it all came spread throughout the game.
Yeah.
He was very consistent on all of his offensive possessions. He could go to the line when you needed him. Nick is a little bit different. He scores in
Kind
bunches.
of bunches, yeah.
He's going to get a couple possessions where he's going to score. He's going to hit two threes and then get a breakaway, get a steal, breakaway, and go for the layup. Next thing you know, he's in double digits after 3 straight offensive possessions where he just kind of took the game over. Which to say, one's better than the other, it's hard to because effectively, you're getting the same production points and so forth. But
Definitely.
the thing with Nick is that he's going to struggle a little bit too. You're going to see times where he's going to go
Still
cold.
a freshman, but off his mission.
And where Tyler, you knew what you were getting game in and game out, that he could hit that 18-foot jumper and from the corner, and when he went to the line, he was going to hit
you know he's gonna
9.9 out of 10 free throws.
Yeah. Think about Tyler, what BYU's front court struggled last year. Tyler was BYU's second leading rebounder last year, so he scored, and obviously his leadership, Kyle's just one of the, I mean, Tyler's one of the best dudes you're going to see, but he also rebounded. I think he was an underrated defender. He's I don't think he's the defender Nick Emery is, but he just did so much for this team, and he took so much pressure off of his teammates. I think BYU, they're really struggling to figure out how to replace Tyler Haas. How do we get that consistent scoring from him? How do we score now that I have more defensive pressure on me? So I think BYU, they're starting to get a little better feel now. I think we saw that in the Belmont game, but you just can't replace a Tyler Haas. And I think, myself included, I think a lot of us underestimated his loss.
Definitely. Moving on, we're going to talk Marriott Center Annex that broke ground on.
Excited for this.
It broke ground yesterday on Monday. Huge project. It's been in the works for years. It took a lot of time and effort and money. I was at the press conference yesterday, and there was a lot. It was very emotional. Coach Rose. It was just everything finally came together. It was finally happening. There were times where he didn't know it was gonna happen. The Mon family, they're associated with, I believe, Young Living Oils. They did the endowment for the donation back in 2011. They came to Coach Rose with a check, and here we are now into the end of 2015. And it's finally happening. The Mon family, they donated a lot of money. Keith Nellison, he did great things with this. He not only did he invest money, but he invested time. He would meet with Coach Rose to go and try and find other potential sponsors who would be willing to divvy up that money to make this project happen. He was very passionate about it, and he's someone that really cares about BYU athletics, and it's good to have someone like that in your court.
Definitely.
We're making a lot out of this. Robbie, talk to me a little bit about what you think this means for the future of BYU hoops.
Yeah, this is long overdue. Just BYU, where they're at, BYU is a good basketball program. They're not a national power by any means, but they're a consistent tournament team. They have the national recognition that Jimmer Fredette bought. So BYU definitely needs this. And if you compare it to in-state teams, Utah State, BYU is definitely behind them in the facilities when it comes to basketball. Those teams already have practice facilities.
You look at Utah's, they just opened up earlier this season.
Yeah.
100,000 square feet compared to BYU's, which is 38,000.
Yeah.
Granted, that's what happens when you have taxpayers
who
you can run a bond and get that taken care of, where BYU had to have the money up front before they built this
which
facility.
Which is impressive in and of itself that BYU is able to. So it says a lot about the donors at BYU and just the passionate donors at BYU. But going along, just a little bit of a story, it's kind of funny. So BYU, they usually practice in the Marriott Center, but sometimes they have to practice in the Smith Fieldhouse or even the Richards Building, which is where the students play pickup basketball, play a lot of their intramural games. So I remember a couple times last semester and the semester before, I'm a student right now here at BYU. You'd be playing in the RB, playing some pickup ball, and here comes Tyler Haas. Oh, there's Josh Sharp.
Did they have their wristbands on?
Yeah, they had their wristbands on. I know they're playing some pickup ball with you, and like, oh, hey guys, we got practice in 30 minutes. Can you guys get out? Like, oh yeah. So just the fact that they were practicing on like these dinky courts that the students were practicing on, I think that in and of itself says, yeah, BYU definitely need a practice facility.
Yeah, to kind of build on that story, Tom Holmo and President Worthen both spoke at the press conference yesterday, and they said that it was when Tyler Haas returned home from his mission and they saw his passion to be the most excellent athlete, to excel at what he did, that he knew no office hours. That was a quote that they used, that he knew no office hours and he would practice anywhere, anytime.
Yeah.
And that they saw that drive that he had and they wanted so badly to be able to give him what he needed. They said, you know, he'd bounce around from the Marriott Center to the Richards Building, to the Smithfield House, and there were times that he couldn't find anywhere to practice.
Yeah.
This week, BYU has Christmas in the World, and mm-hmm. Coach Rose brought up that it's kind of ironic that that they broke ground on it this week because Christmas in the World is happening this week where they're kicked out of the Marriott Center.
Yeah, that's
they can't practice. Mm-hmm. They're practicing in the Smithfield House
yeah.
right now. Tonight, they're practicing up in Salt Lake, and that's why they have their two games against in-state opponents, Utah and Weber State, which we're going to preview in a little bit. They're playing away from home. They're playing their annual game in Vivint Smart Home Arena. I'm surprised I actually got that right, by the way. I'm still used to saying Energy Solutions
Arena. You should feel right at home in Vivint, right?
Yep. So it's going to be great next year when they're going to have the opportunity to have their own facilities to practice in. They don't need to worry about what their home is going to be. And the President Worthen and Tom Homo both expressed that they wish that they could have made this happen while Tyler was at BYU. Mm-hmm. I think any BYU fan can agree with that. But because of what he did, this legacy that he cemented while at BYU, he's going to be able to see the benefits of the program. And Tyler is definitely, he's going to be happy. I saw Marty there yesterday, and he looked absolutely thrilled about the future and what's going to happen with this program. And he has another son that's going to be entering the pipeline next year, TJ. He's going to see the benefits of that, and Tyler's going to see the benefits of that during the offseason. I guarantee that he will spend no less than 10 hours a day in the practice facility during the offseason. But next up, we're going to talk about Jimmer. He made his NBA D-League debut last night, and he exploded for 37 points, 8 rebounds, and eight assists and 4 rebounds.
Yeah.
There were times that it took me back to 2011 when Jimmer would just, he'd take the ball up court, pull up from about 28 feet out, just drain it. And there were spurs that just reminded me so much of the old Jimmer, which we hadn't seen in the NBA. There were moments, like when he played for the Kings and when they played against the Knicks.
Yeah, 23 points, I think it was.
Yeah, where he just went off. And now that he's with the Westchester Knicks, these guys don't play a whole lot of defense. And it's crazy. I mean, it's the D League. It's the biggest story on the D League. You go to the D League's website.
They were tweeting it out all last night. And you know, the best part I love about Jimmer, he's a legend on social media. You go on Twitter, search Jimmer's name on Twitter when he's doing well, you'll see the best tweets ever. Basketball Twitter is so good. You got these black guys down south who are just using the best language, all the slang. Like, what the heck
is it,
this
best
name?
Or the worst?
Yeah, however you want to interpret it. They use very good slang, I guess. They use lots of slang. Just Jimmer be saucing out there. Jimmer taking that peel off that bit.
And for it to be Jimmer,
the whitest guy to ever play at any
college university. It was great. You go to the like I was saying earlier, you go to the D-League's website. They have 3 stories about it.
Yeah.
120 Sports. It's an affiliate of MSN. They were tweeting about it. Floyd Mayweather.
He was courtside.
yelling at Jimmer to shoot the ball.
And you see Jimmer post game. Yeah, Floyd told me to shoot, so I shot.
I mean, there's an ESPN story about it. Yeah. It's all over social media. The NBA's tweeting about it. It's Jimmer mania. It's not to the same extent that it was back in 2011, but the way that he captured the nation, it's something that, you know, anyone can go back and remember where they were when Jimmer hit that half-court shot against Utah. When he went off against San Diego State in the Marriott Center.
Yeah.
I mean, he did so many great things for BYU's program and the college basketball across the nation. I mean, he was the most prolific scorer that I can remember since I've followed college basketball. And it was good to see him back in his element. I mean, there were times where, like I said, he'd pull up for a 3 and that smooth stroke that you knew from that 3-pointer. There were times
just
that
the classic crossover, just crossing this guy, taking it to the hoop.
Yeah, and there were times where he couldn't do anything wrong yesterday. Yeah. He just chucked the ball up and it would go in the hoop. I mean, seriously, he had a great game. Granted, it's the D League.
Yeah,
they're
not
playing defense.
Average 30 the NBA.
But it's exciting to see.
It's just cool to kind of just reconjure up those old just kind of memories from 4 years ago of when Jimmer would just go off. Like, it's just cool to see Jimmer at 37 points. That was the norm back in the day. So just seeing that headline again brings back memories.
37
so
points was
fans.
A bad game for him back
in the
day.
Yeah, I know, right?
After that, we have Travis Hansen, former BYU college basketball star. He had his jersey retired by Mountain View High School on Monday. Huge honor. Travis was, I mean, one of the greatest players to play at BYU. Played a little bit in Russia, I believe in Spain.
Yeah.
He was in the NBA for a while,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, just a little point. My favorite thing about Travis, Google Travis Hanson Atlanta Hawks. It's probably the best basketball pictures. Just, he's got his bleached hair, just NSYNC style, and the Hawks jerseys from the 90s, 2000s, just a classic picture of Travis Hanson. So Google Travis Hanson Atlanta Hawks if you have some time. It's great.
So we're going to get off into our first segment now, buy or sell. We got three topics we're going to debate, whether we buy or sell what is going on in BYU basketball. First, it's going to be Chase Fisher. He went off. He's kind of been in a slump the last couple games. He got off to a good start in the season against Utah Valley, but hasn't really done too well up until the second half against Belmont. Scored 19 points in the game. All 19 came in the second half. I think he was five.
Yeah, he made five 3-pointers.
Five 3-pointers.
5 and 11. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see. It's definitely good to see Chase scoring. But are you buying that he's going to be able to keep this up on a consistent basis?
Yeah. If you follow BYU basketball, just we saw Chase last year. I think the biggest thing for Chase was consistency. I can't remember a game last year. Go back, look at the stats. We had two good games consecutively. He'd have a great game against Chaminade when he hit 10 threes, and he'd be invisible next game against San Diego State. That was kind of his MO last year. So I'm gonna sell it for now, just to kind of see I'm gonna wait until we see Chase Fisher put back 2 to 3 good games, just because we haven't seen it from him yet. So
this is tough. I'm gonna buy it because I don't think that you can slump any worse than he. I don't want to be negative, but
yeah.
He's really struggled in the first couple games of the season. I mean, really, he's been non-existent, threatened to get benched.
Yeah.
Chase is a captain on this team. He's a senior. He's experienced. He was a starter last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I'm going to buy it. I think that he's going to have – I mean, it's Chase Fisher. He has more confidence than anyone.
Yeah, the confidence isn't the issue for Chase Fisher. Just he'll shoot. He's not going
to
shy.
He just had to find a stroke, and I think that he's going to be able to find his – that he's going to be able to continue that the next couple weeks.
Yeah.
He's going to need to play the way he did against Belmont, against Utah, playing that way against Weber State and Utah State next week is just – it's just icing on the cake. Next on buy or sell, we have Jimmer. Does his 37 points really mean anything? Are you buying or selling?
As much as I might like to buy, I think sell. There's a lot of talk about has Jimmer been used wrong, and yeah, maybe he has. But if he's been in the NBA for 4 years now, if he hasn't done anything, NBA coaches are smart enough they would get the most out of him. I don't think Jimmer does anything in the NBA from this point on. Just Jimmer, he's a guy that needs to have the ball in his hands a lot. And you see the guys in the NBA that have the ball in their hands. You see the Carmelo Anthony, LeBron James, Steph Curry, James Harden type. And Jimmer just isn't that caliber of an athlete at them. And I don't think any NBA team is going to give him the reins to do that. If he could fit into a role of just being a catch-and-shoot guy off the bench, like a J.J. Redick type. Not even that. J.J. Redick's really elite at that. But even close to that type of level, I think he could contribute. But I don't think we're going to see. I think Jimmer's going to be in Europe in the next year or two, honestly.
Yeah, I'm selling it as well. I mean, like you said, Jimmer needs to be a guy that has the ball in his hands. He shoots better off the bounce.
Yeah.
He's not someone that he's not a catch-and-shoot player, which is what NBA teams wanted to mold him to be. I mean, he bounced around with what? Four teams now?
Yeah, he's been the Kings, the Bulls, the Pelicans.
And then he did the summer league and off-season training camp with the Spurs, which if the Spurs can't find a spot for him, I mean, it's kind of...
might be kind of the writing on the wall.
Yeah, definitely.
But hey, he's got confidence now. He's at 37. You know, the Knicks, they're not great this year. They have some point guard troubles. I could see him... I think the Knicks will give Jimmer a chance this year at least to kind of, because they have some room on the roster. And
I think they have 14 guys on the roster right now. And the talk kind of was when Jimmer was drafted in the D-League draft was that Westchester was going to use him to kind of help him develop, maybe find his stroke again in a game before New York were to bring him back up, which that's kind of cool that he has an opportunity to go back home. He's from Glens Falls, New York. If you don't know that, then... why are you listening to this podcast? You're not a BYU fan. But he, it's going to be great for him to go home. And how cool is it going to be to play in, I just totally spaced on the name of the arena, the Madison Square Garden. For one of the most, they're struggling right now, but one of the most storied franchises in NBA history. Finally, on buy or sell, is BYU's post play against Utah's post play. They've had some good moments. They've had some bad moments. Talk to me about, how do you think BYU's post play matched up with Utah?
Yeah, going into this year, the big talk was about BYU's post play. Hey, BYU, like, BYU has the players now. We got BYU has Kafusi. They have Jamal Aids. They have Kyle Davis added to the program. And BYU, honestly, they've done what they're supposed to do up to this point. They played really small front courts. They haven't been challenged at all. And BYU's front court has been playing very well. Corbin Kafusi and Kyle Davis both averaging double figures. Kyle Davis is averaging a double double. So they've done well up to this point, but Utah's post play is just a totally different animal. Jakob Poeltl, he could have been a first-round NBA pick last year. He'll be a lottery pick in this upcoming NBA draft. Utah also starts Kuzma, who's a 6'9" guy. So this and Gonzaga will no doubt be the toughest test for BYU's front court. But I was originally going to sell this, but I think Kafusi is going to step up in this game. So I'm going to buy that BYU's post play. Not that they dominate, but they play well in this game. I think Kafusi is going to kind of surprise, kind of almost have his coming out party against Jakob Poeltl and kind of show the WCC and maybe even the nation kind of, hey, like, look at how much I've progressed over this offseason. So I'm really looking forward to see how Corbin Kafusi handles Jakob Poeltl down low. What do you think, Zach?
I'm selling this. I'm selling it down the river. Yeah. Utah with Kuzma and Poeltl, I mean, those are two very talented guys in the post. Like you said, Poeltl's playing like a lottery pick right now. And while there's been improvement in the post out of BYU, they haven't matched up against anyone that's even close to this caliber.
Definitely not.
I mean, they struggled against Long Beach State, which their tallest guy was, 6'7"?
Yeah.
Struggled badly against Mississippi Valley State, which they didn't have any size in the front court. Belmont, I don't know.
They played
well against Belmont, but they started 6'8" and 6'7" in the front court.
So,
Poeltl's a true 7-footer. He's aggressive. He's physical. Not that Kafusi isn't, but he's still learning the game a little bit. He's going to be flustered. And what I've noticed with BYU is, especially on the defensive end, is that they give up too many second chance points. This is just my observation when I'm watching them on the court against Mississippi Valley State. They struggle to pull down boards from the defensive glass for stretches, and you can't do that for 2, 3, even 5 minutes against Utah without getting killed. You can't give these guys second chance points in the post, and there's going to need to be a lot of improvement. Kyle Davis has been really good, but he turns over the ball a lot in the post, which he'll need to improve in that in order to really compete against these guys. I'm going to sell it there.
Okay.
Next segment, we have the Full Court Press. It's an insider report given by Robbie McCombs. He's going to give us some key matchups, his hot takes. What's going on? What do you need to know about BYU's opponent?
Yeah, so Utah. So we could put this with the Utah preview as well. But Utah, I think looking at Utah, the big things they struggle with this year, some statistics that they've seen, is 3-point defense. And Utah's one of the worst teams in the country on 3-point percentage on their defense. I think they allow opponents to shoot 41%, which is 328th in the nation out of 351 Division I teams. So that's pretty bad. And you look at Utah's, obviously their strength is in the front court. But I think it's kind of similar to BYU. Just as BYU is missing Tyler Haas, I think Utah a lot is missing DeLon Wright. DeLon Wright was an All-American. He was a first-round NBA draft pick. Not only did he run the offense, but he might have been the best defender last year in the NCAA. Just everything he did. Yeah, go ahead, Zach.
Well, I'll finish your thought.
No, so I think just it's very similar, just that they're missing DeLon Wright. I think a lot of that has to do with their struggles defending the three-point line, which could bode well for BYU. BYU, a lot of what they do is dependent on how well they shoot. So CPUA could capitalize on that.
Yeah, the reason a lot of the reason that Utah's struggling is because DeLon Wright's gone. Brandon Taylor, he's going to be outmatched. I mean, he's only, what, 5'11"?
Yeah.
5'10", 5'10", playing the point. And then Brian Swinney, he actually joined Ben Criddle, host of Cougar Sports on ESPN 960, 4 to 7 every day. But he was saying that Loveridge, who he's going to kind of play the three, he has a lot of lapses on his defense. He doesn't really play defense. He just wants to really focus on his offensive game. So with Taylor being outmatched and Loveridge not really contributing to what he does on D compared to the rest of the team, it's definitely been a weakness for them.
Yeah, definitely. Just so I think the big key for BYU would be that game. How well do they shoot from the 3-point? Like, can they take advantage of lapses in Utah defense and the perimeter defense? And also just looking at Utah, one thing BYU has really struggled this with is turnovers on offense. Just Kyle Collinsworth, I think he's starting to adjust a little better. We saw that in the Belmont game, but I think he's been trying to do a little bit too much in the offensive end, trying to force it a little too much in the post, trying to get his teammates involved. So one thing Utah doesn't do very well, they don't force turnovers very well. So if BYU, if they could get their fast, if their offense going, especially once they get in the half court, BYU's been really struggling this year in the half court offense, and not force turnovers, get good looks, I think that could bode well for BYU as well. So those two things, watch those two things in the game. Utah's 3-point defense and they're forcing turnovers, see if they could do that.
Now we're a couple days out. Obviously Utah is the big matchup. It's the Holy War on the hard court? They haven't played for 2 years. We can call it that.
Yeah.
Haven't played 2 years in football. What about Weber State? What do you know about Weber State?
Yeah, Weber State, they got two guys. They've been pretty good this stuff. They've been 4-2 so far in the year. They lost a close game to Utah State in their opener. They haven't played super great teams, but they've won their games. But they're two big guys to know. They have a starting guard, Jeremy Senglin. He averages 23 points on the year, shoots a ridiculous 60% from 3-point range, which has got to be one of the top in the country. So he's their point guard. He averages 35 minutes a game, so he's going to be out there all game. So BYU's premier defense is really going to be tested by that. And then also their big guy, I don't know his last name, Joel Bullenboy. I'll say that. But Jay Billis, actually a couple days on Twitter, gave him a shout-out. He's averaging 16 and 12, one of the leading rebounders last year. So that's again, second game in a row, BYU will have another test in the front court, see how they deal with Bullenboy. Probably totally butchering that. That's what I'll call him, though. But that'll be another good test for BYU's front court. They play Yaka Purtle and then going against Weber State's big guy as well. So see how BYU matches up against that.
Yeah, that's going to be BYU's annual game that's played at Vivint Smart Home Arena, formerly known as Energy Solutions Arena, formerly known as the Delta Center.
Yeah.
Basically, it's the home of the Jazz. BYU goes up there and plays a game every year during Christmas Around the World, which is held at the Marriott Center. It'll be fun. I like playing in-state teams. A lot of people weren't ecstatic about the UVU game, but I really liked it. It's the University Parkway Collision, the Crosstown Clash, whatever the heck you want to call it. It's good for the Valley to be able to have that matchup. It's good for the state to be able to play other matchups.
Yeah, and kind of go off you said about the Jazz Arena. I think something good for BYU going forward, because the last couple of years, BYU hasn't played the best teams in Vivint Arena or whatever you may call it. This year, last year they played Hawaii. This year they played Weber. But the past years,
two years ago, they played Virginia Tech. Awful. I mean, it's a big name because they're a P5 quote unquote team, but they weren't very good.
Yeah, past year they had Arizona come when Jimmer was playing. They've had Michigan State come. So I think BYU, they're in order to beef up that non conference schedule, I think that'd be a really good way to be able to leverage Vivint Arena to bring a solid team that maybe won't come to Provo, but they say, hey, we'll come play you in a Vivint, and you come play at our place. I think that's one thing I think to look for going forward to help beef up BYU's long non-conference schedule.
Yeah, for sure. We have some sound from Coach Rose from his press conference today. He's going to talk a little Utah, what he saw in practice today.
All right, guys, fire away.
What do you think the state of the rivalry with Utah is? Does it seem the same as always, or less because you don't play them twice a year?
Well, I think that the opportunity probably seems a little bit more. the fact that you get one shot each year, and then, you know, the fact that you know, we're on the bad end of this. I think that hopefully our urgency will be a lot better as far as dropping the last two. So they're very, very talented team, and a team that's really experienced together, and they're really consistent in what they do and how they play. So hopefully we can find you know, a few things that we can do, especially on offense, to be able to go up there and score. And then defensively, it's a challenge because they're a really balanced team with a really good center, and so we've got our hands full here. But it's exciting. It's an exciting opportunity. Looking forward to it.
You're five games in now with the new guidelines by the NCAA for defense. Do you have a better feel now for how the game is going to be officiated, or is that still sort of in the process?
Well, I think that we have a pretty good idea of how it's going to be officiated. I think that there are some things that are just absolutes, and you know that that's going to happen. There's still a lot of, I think, individual interpretation on the block charge call. The fact that if it's inside that arc helps some, you know, because it doesn't matter when you got there. If you got there early, you got there late. If you're inside the arc, then it's obviously going to be a block. But there's a lot of possessions from, you know, in that key that still are a little bit confusing to us as far as who's initiating the contact and how it's going. The vertical cylinder that each player has been kind of confusing at times, but it can still be a pretty physical game. I mean, that's what we'll expect going up there.
Do you think it's produced the freedom of movement they were hoping to try to help with these?
I think so. I think it's a little bit different. The majority of you know, the defensive strategies as far as chucking cutters and guys without the ball, I think most of that has been cleaned up pretty good. Illegal screens, I think, is still something that everybody's trying to work through, but you know, our games that we've played to this point, I think, have been pretty flowing, free-flowing games where both teams are, you know, you just have space to move in, and that's good. That's a good thing.
I feel like you're better equipped in the post, your depth in the post against them as opposed to last year.
Yeah, I hope so. I think that the fact that we play similar with two post guys mostly on the floor, there are times when they have kind of a four guard lineup when Lovridge plays the four. But I think that can help us. I think the fact that we're a lot more balanced scoring, a really good defensive team, and they have a great game plan every game going in. And you know, the last couple of years we've had one big score that they've done a pretty good job on, and hopefully that we'll be able to balance this out a little bit. Maybe that'll help us.
How do you feel about the preparations going into Utah? Obviously, saw a lot of improvement with the Belmont game and some things you're going to get fixed. How do you feel about just the preparations just yesterday and today? Do you feel comfortable? You guys feel ready? Is there anything you're still concerned about?
Well, we're concerned about a lot. It's a good team, and I think that. What hopefully the things that we, you know, really can depend on are, you know, our effort and our, you know, our defensive assignments, our ability to rebound. Those things have been pretty solid for us, and hopefully that's something that we can depend on going up there. Offensively, we've been, you know, a little bit up and down, and we haven't. That's been a real staple for us over the years. We've been pretty free flowing. Consistent, you know, offensive team, and hopefully that, you know, we can make strides. I thought we made some real strides in the Belmont game, especially in the second half, and hopefully that we can build on that through this game. But you know, this is one of those, you know, games that are real opportunities for your team early in the season, and hopefully we can take advantage of it.
Coach, some of your players approach this just like any other game, just the next game. how do you approach this with your team in practice?
Yeah, if they're telling you they're approaching this like it's any other game, I think they're probably trying to make sure that they keep their emotions in check. I mean, this is a really important game, and I think that the preparation is a little more intense. There's more urgency in practice. Our practice yesterday was really good, and hopefully our practice tonight, we'll be able to see the same results. But they know a lot about us, and we know a lot about them, and hopefully our guys will be able to perform at their highest level. It's what you hope for.
When you guys set up the series, when that split came, wasn't it supposed to be played the first Saturday of December? And why is that kind of gone?
It was set up that way, a 4-year deal for the first Saturday in December. And then last year it changed because that first Saturday in December they had a chance to go play at Kansas, or was it? It was Kansas somewhere. They played the University of Kansas in Kansas City, I think, last year. And so we moved it to a weekday, and then this is the start of a new contract. I think it's a home and home. So.
When your players talk about points per possession is one of the things as coaches you stress to them defensively. How have those numbers changed since last year? And we don't get really to see those numbers as much.
It's better. I think that... we compare a lot of, those numbers to a totally different team, because we played with, the majority of the time we had 4 guards on the floor and we were guarding a lot different as far as just schematically. We were trying to pressure a lot defensively and deny because that was our advantage. If they got us close to the basket, in a couple of positions, physically, it was really tough on us. So, I think that we're better around the rim. We're better protecting the paint. We're better rebounding the ball. But I think it's a lot of it by design and by the personnel that we're playing.
Do you have a specific goal as far as points per possession of what you're trying to hit and what you're trying to give to others?
Every game, that's a hard number to try to predict because of the amount of possessions in every game, and so we have some real staples that we evaluate, and most of it is paint touches, penetration into the paint, and then flash offensive rebound, flashing into the paint for a catch, and then offensive rebounds that result in a paint catch, because that's where most of your scores come from, is when that ball gets into the painted area and it gets kicked out for shots, or a lot of fouls occur in that area. So that's a stat that we really kind of try to use to build our defense.
You've got a lot of guys on this team, I'm only 3 seniors, who've never really played in the BYU-Utah rivalry game. Does that kind of change your preparations with them, or does that kind of change how they approach it, maybe?
I think the only way that you can really feel it is to experience it. It's a great road venue, and it's been that way for years. We had, a break in it for a year or two where we actually had pretty good fans attendance up there because there were tickets available. There's no tickets available now, and so it'll be all Utah fans. And there's a real, a challenge that teams, the personality of teams. They'll take on these road experiences, and hopefully the experience of Kyle and Chase and Kyle Davis. We talked about Kyle Davis as an experienced player because he's played at a couple of places, but this will be unique to him. And so, then Nate Austin. Nate's a guy who's been through it before. So hopefully we'll get really good, consistent games out of them and then see how it plays out.
Coach, Kyle talked about how last year it felt like how key is rebounding on both ends of the court for game control of the game, or what will be the key point?
Well, the defensive rebounding for us is huge. They are very, very good at tracking down their misses. In some games they don't miss many, but you know, hopefully that we can create that. But it's twofold. These defensive possessions, we have to, you know, really guard and challenge shots and get them to miss, and then the next challenge is to grab it and track it down. And like I said, that has been a strength of our team, and hopefully that you know, we'll play to that strength here on you know, on Wednesday night. But you know, the first and most important thing is to make them take tough shots. If the ball's going into the paint and the big fella's got it in his hands a lot right around the basket, it'll be difficult for us, because he's really good down there, not only at scoring for himself, but finding open guys for open shots.
Dave, how important do you think your month of December is, taking kind of as a whole with everything you got coming up here?
Well, I actually extended into the first couple weeks of January too, because I mean, you look at these eight games, the next 10 are away from our building, and we need to really play well and win a lot of these games. And so, you know, once you get the league, it's really important to be playing your best, and hopefully we can build some momentum with what I consider to be a pretty challenging schedule here in the next 5 or 6 weeks.
All right, thanks, Coach.
All right, that was Coach Rose talking a little bit about Utah. Now we are going to preview Utah. You got a little taste of it in the full court press where we did our insider report. We're going to delve into it a little bit more. Talk about some matchups, who we think is going to be defending who, and then we'll do some predictions for Utah and Weber State.
Yeah, so look, I think the biggest thing for Utah is the front court matchup. That's where Utah's strength is. They got Jakob Poeltl, they got Kuzma up there. Poeltl's averaging over 20 points a game. He's a great rebounder, a true 7-footer. So how does BYU combat that? I'm really curious to see I'm assuming Corbin Kafusi is going to guard him. Corbin Kafusi is BYU's biggest player, best defender. And what I like about Corbin Kafusi, we haven't seen have a chance for him this year to see it going against elite big, but we saw last year a little bit in that Gonzaga game in the Kennel. Corbin Kafusi did great on Sabonis. He did good on Karnowski when he guarded him. One of my favorite vines from last year is when Kafusi blocked Sabonis from the back and just like swatted the ball at the backboard. I think that's an iconic moment. But I think Corbin Kafusi's defense and on the offensive end against Jakob Poeltl will be the biggest thing I'll be looking for in this game.
Yeah, that vine is definitely up there with Jake Toulson's Riverdance and
classic.
Zach Selyus, whatever the heck you want to call it.
Yeah.
The three-point
legends
dance. Yeah. I don't know. It's pretty sick. So with Utah, they're 5-1 on the season. Excuse me, 5-1 on the season. They have they're going to be led on offense by they got Jakob Poeltl, who he's averaging in double figures in both points and rebounds, 20 and 10. That's a tough load to go against.
Yeah,
he
might be the best big in the country. He's probably better than any of Gonzaga's bigs, honestly, I think, on the offensive end. So he's going to give BYU a lot of fits. I'm really curious to see how BYU defenses BYU, because if BYU doubles him, are they going to bring Kyle Collinsworth out? Are they going to bring Kyle Davis to get him from the weak side? And that opens up Utah's three-point shooter, Jordan Loveridge, who's BYU's second leading scorer, is averaging 16 points on the year. And almost about 70 or 80% of his shots are three-pointers. He just loves to shoot the three-point line. Same with Brandon Taylor, their point guard. He loves to shoot threes too. So if BYU's going to bring that double team, is BYU going to bring the double team, leave those three-point shooters open? Or are they going to trust Corbin Kafusi to go one-on-one with Poeltl in the post?
The thing that surprises me about Jordan Loveridge is that watching him in high school, he was a guy that played a little bit more in the low post, not necessarily his back to the basket, but he could bang around down in the low post when he needed to. And year by year, he's kind of shot more from the outside. I remember it was a project last year that they kind of talked about how he was going to kind of develop more into a stretch four. He's almost like a wing now, playing the three for the Utes. And now he's taken 7.5 threes a game.
Yeah, it's just interesting. The amount of three-pointers, the percentage of three-pointers he's taken has gone up each year since he's been at Utah, which is oftentimes you see for a player kind of go down a little bit as they develop an offensive game a little more. So it's kind of interesting how Utah has been utilizing him.
Well, and I think a lot of it has to do with the strength that they have in the post. They probably feel pretty comfortable with Poeltl and Kuzma. And, I mean, those are definitely their strengths on this team, and they need a little more production out of the perimeter for sure, especially with DeLon Wright leaving. Mm-hmm. Let's talk some matchups. Who do we think? I mean, obviously we've talked Corbin Kaufusi, and Poeltl, Jakob Poeltl. Who else do we think is going to match up with who defensively?
Yeah, so you got Loveridge. He's their second league scorer. He's their wing out there. He's 6'6". I think you probably either see Fisher or Collinsworth on him. I think we see Kyle to start on him just because Kyle has the physicality and the size to match up with Jordan Loveridge. Nick Emery and Chase Fisher would be a little small to match up on Loveridge. And then Utah's point guard, Brandon Taylor, Zach touched on it a little bit earlier. He's only 5'10 or 5'11", so I think that's where we see Nick Emery really clamp down on Taylor, try to slow down their offense a little bit.
And he's quick, too, and I think that Nick's perimeter defense probably has the best opportunity to impact him quite a bit.
Yeah, what I like about Nick, he's not as athletic as his brother Jackson, but Nick, he has the effort out there. He's, out of all the BYU players, I think he gives the most effort on defense. Well, he just goes on defense, staying with his man, getting in the passing lanes.
Yeah, and he's been well coached too. I mean, Quincy Lewis, he coached at Lone Peak. He's here at BYU now. Lone Peak, they were the national champions when Emery, Hawes, and Mika were there, and they're known a lot for their offensive game, for making these Jimmer-esque shots, and they were described as playing city ball by inner city ball by some teams back east. But one of the underrated things about these teams was the way that they play defense. They play the pack line defense. It's been a story during the offseason. And you can see that Nick has a real grasp because he's played in that system. This is his fifth year in the system now.
Yeah, he definitely has experience.
So we have...
just to finish off the matchups, Utah's their power forward, Kyle Kuzma, 6'9". I think easy one is Kyle Davis guarding him. Mm-hmm. And then that leaves Lorenzo Bonham, who's a third-leading scorer, and he's kind of taken that DeLon Wright role in the perimeter. He's probably their best perimeter defender. So I can see Bonham matching up a lot with Kyle Collinsworth just because Bonham's their most active defender. But I think we'll probably see Chase Fisher matched up on him.
So who do you think Utah is going to utilize? Obviously, we know who's going to be in the low post. Yeah. You have Bonham. You think he's going to be on,
I'm
Collinsworth.
Really, I'm really curious.
But what about Emery and Fisher?
Yeah, I think they could put Loveridge on because you don't need quickness to guard Kyle because you could sag off Kyle. He's not been a threat to shoot thus far this season. So they could put Jordan Loveridge on Kyle. I think we could see that a lot. But Bonham, he's 6'4". He's close to 200 pounds. So I think they kind of give Kyle different looks. Loveridge a little more physicality, and Bonham a little more active defender quickness. So I think they throw a lot of different looks at Kyle to throw him off.
Yeah, I think that throwing Loveridge out there, he's kind of the weakest defender. He's the weak link on that perimeter.
Yeah.
But Kyle's strength is slashing. He's going to try and he's going to come from the perimeter to he's going to come into the paint and try to get it done down there. They probably have enough confidence that Kuzma and Poeltl are going to be able to get things done in the paint, that they're going to be able to crash on him when he's coming in and kind of take care of that there. Bonham, I probably see him matching up against Emery.
Yeah.
Because Emery's kind of been the guy the last couple games.
Yeah, Bonham's the best.
They want to try and slow him down, opposed to Fisher, who he's struggled and he's kind of finding his own now. I mean, granted, the size differential between...
He's got about 5 inches.
Five inches on Taylor, opposed to where Nick only has 3. Yeah. So, I'm not a defensive mastermind. Heck, I'm not even a basketball mastermind. It'll be interesting to see what Chris Kovacic does to defend that and what his game plan is. But let's get to some predictions. What do you see? How do you see this first game playing out? And let's talk Weber State after that.
Yes. Yeah, so Utah's, they're 7.5. Vegas has given about 7 and 8.5, depending where you look.
They opened at 8.5. I think it's at 7.5.
Yeah, it's
now
at 7.5
Utah.
Now. So I think BYU loses. I think BYU could cover. So the reason I think BYU could keep it close. So what Utah struggled with in the Miami game, Utah lost to Miami 90-66. Instead of Miami, Miami just got up and down the court in their transition. And granted, Miami has great athletes. They're better athletes than BYU. But BYU, they get up and down the court. Obviously, they're the fastest. They have the shortest average length of possession in the country, just at 13 seconds. So I think BYU, if they could out if they get in the offense before Jakob Poeltl gets set on the post, I think BYU has a chance to pull off the upset, and obviously if they're making shots. But I think ultimately Jakob Poeltl is too much. I think Jordan Loveridge is going to have a big game for Utah. So I'd say Utah wins 81-75. So I think BYU covers that spread, but Utah wins by about six ultimately.
Okay, I'm kind of go something similar. BYU is, like you said, they're going to try and get up and down the court. They like to play fast. That's something that Utah struggled against, especially losing DeLon Wright, where they were able to kind of just grind it out, play real slow because of the defense that DeLon Wright offered on the perimeter. I think that BYU is going to get – they're going to score a lot of points, but they've had issues on defense. They give up way too many second opportunities. They don't do great on the defensive boards. I think that they don't cover the spread barely. I think they're going to probably lose by eight. So let's go 77-69.
Okay. Yeah, I think the biggest thing was which BYU team showed. If we see the BYU that played against Belmont, I think BYU could definitely spring the upset. But if we see that BYU team that showed up against Long Beach State that had so many turnovers, that struggled from the line, or that team Mississippi Valley State that struggled to rebound against that small front court, the BYU loses by 20. So it's just a matter of if BYU could come in, if they could play, if they could grab rebounds, if they could make shots, which you see every game, but you got to exploit that against Utah, who struggled on the three-point line. If they could get out and run and get down before Utah's bigs can establish in the post, those would be BYU's keys to pulling off the upset.
How about Weber State? Do you have a spread on that game?
Yeah, they haven't come out with the spread yet. But the Ken Pomeroy's statistics, they have BYU winning by 9 points, give BYU an 80% – no, sorry, that's wrong stats. They have BYU as a – so they have BYU only winning by 4 points, 64% chance. I think BYU wins closer to double digits just because BYU has the better depth than Weber State does. Weber State has more of a – they have a good point guard, they have a good big guy. But I think ultimately BYU – their pace wins out in the second half. BYU, I think BYU wins by double digits.
I'm going to go exact same with you there. BYU is going to cover the spread. They're going to win. I mean, 4 points is way too close. BYU has a more complete team than Weber State. I mean, Weber has two guys that are really good players, and they do have some next-level potential, but BYU has a more complete team. I'm going to say that they probably win by 13 or 14.
Yeah.
So that wraps up the TBD podcast on ESPN960sports.com. Again, if you have any suggestions for names for the podcast, please send them in. We aren't creative enough to do this on our own. We were thinking hot takes, maybe hoop talk. If you guys have anything better.
Send in some emojis on there, too. You know, we're open to whatever. So
yeah, maybe in a second language if you know, like, Russian or Korean.
There you go. We'll do some Cyrillic in there.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for listening to the TBD podcast on ESPN960sports.com. Swiss roll tight, got spray behind. I hit the high.